Welcome to the Discotech Podcast. I'm your host, Marcy, and I'm joined by Rachel and Lewis. Today, we have a special guest with us, Emmy Award winner Rob Hedrick, and he's going to discuss the technical aspects of Star Trek Discovery with us. All right, Rob, we'll just jump right into it with you. Thanks for coming. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So have you always been a Star Trek fan, like since you were a child, or did you get into it later?
You know, it's funny. I went to boarding school when I was eighth grade. And of course, boarding school is boarding school. So it was gross and people were rude and beat me up and stuff because I was a smart nerd. And one of the RAs there found out that I was interested in science. And so he was like, have you ever thought about watching Star Trek? And he was a huge Star Trek fan. And so I said, no. And so he showed me the original series, which it was the Ultimate Computer episode. And I was like, oh, I like this. I like this a lot. And then I just went
nice
full tilt. And I loved it. Like, and I couldn't get enough of it. I went and checked out the library, had like all the movies on VHS. I checked out every movie I could get. And then I think the technology always fascinated me. So that's kind of what hooked me. And I think that's why I always was more of a Trek and still am more of a Trek person than a Star Wars person.
Star Wars is definitely more space fantasy than science fiction. I feel like there's a little difference. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Star Trek's always been, you know, deep in the techno babble, which I think has always been fascinating. So
reverse the polarity.
Yeah. And, you know, the scenes in the movies when, you know, like stealing the Enterprise in Star Trek 3, those things were always just, as a kid, I was like, yeah, that's awesome. It's like Scotty showed them. I remember like when UPN was starting and they were like, we're building the network around a new series on Star Trek. And I was like, yeah, come on. And then it came out and I was like, oh, yeah. Captain Janeway's really cool. And my first like real boss in the world was this really strong female who led a team of like 100 people. And I was like, it's kind of like Captain Janeway.
Yes. That's great.
That's another contentious point. I don't know if you follow, like a bunch of the forums are all mad that they're like, how come Discovery or how come Voyager and Deep Space Nine haven't gotten the HD treatment like Next Gen did? It's like, because they screwed up and shot it on tape.
Oh, yeah, it is. And yeah. The screenshots from it now are just really hard to look at because they are so blurry.
They're bad. Like, even if you have the DVDs, you're like, this looks like crap. I went and rewatched like the last three episodes of season two last night. And I was like, oh yeah, I forget how good this show is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when he touches the time crystal
and
sees like the, what we know Captain Pike for, and we're all, and everybody's like, oh God, it's still going to happen to him.
I was just hoping this was maybe a slightly different timeline or something. And it wasn't going to happen to the Pike we left.
So what did you think when, I think it was the penultimate episode when he's getting ready to beam back to the Enterprise. And, oh no, it was the final episode when he beams back to the Enterprise and Captain Georgiou goes, you know, I'm from your mirror universe. And he looks at her and goes, what mirror universe? And then
he totally knew. He knew. I loved that moment between them. That was great.
So is evil Pike a thing? Is that going to be something we see?
I kind of hope not, because I want him to stay super wholesome.
I don't want to say this in front of too many people, but he might be my favorite captain now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's my favorite captain. That's the cat's out of the bag on that for me.
When he's like, this is what Starfleet's about. This is what we stand for. And I was like, yeah, that.
He's just so good. And he trusts all the right people when he should.
Yeah.
He knows.
Did you watch? I'm sure you watched all the short treks as well.
I haven't. We talked about this last week. I am working my way through them.
So the one with number one and Spock in the turbo lift might be the trekkiest trek thing I've ever trekked. It's probably one of the best, like Star Trek. It's the most Star Trekian trek thing you will ever see.
Really? I have to watch that.
Yeah.
That's my homework assignment, which is going to be just fine to do this week. We had some questions to ask. And Rob, you were saying that there's some controversy with the way Discovery is being filmed.
Yeah, it seems that there's a lot of disagreement. Like on the, there's a couple forums that have threads going about like what they're shooting on. And I think there's a misunderstanding too. And I only know this because I'm in the post-production world. You know, we shoot our show. I'm responsible for four TV shows that deliver to Fox Sports. And we shoot the show in 1080, even though Fox is only 720. So a lot of times the format's based more on the equipment than what the deliverable is. So I found a pretty convincing still shot from the set. And it looks like they're doing 2K. And it looks like it's probably an Alexa or an Alexa Mini. And then there's people like, well, why aren't they shooting in 4K? It's like, well, they're not going to deliver in 4K. So why would you pay for the extra storage?
Yes. Also, I think it's easier to upscale to 4K in the future than to film and to compose in 4K now.
It is. But I think that we're going to find, like, you know, everyone's complaining that why hasn't Voyager and Deep Space Nine gotten the treatment that Next Generation did when they went back and rescanned all the negatives. And they made the mistake and they shot it on tape. And so that tape is locked at the format that it's shot in. Whereas with film, if you even 16 millimeter, you can go back and look at the original series that was shot on 16 millimeter. And they went and did a really nice clean log scan of all that. And the original series looks like it was shot yesterday, aside from, you know, the phosphorescent orange sets.
We also wanted to get some of your technical insight into the first two seasons that we've seen already.
Did you notice that there was a complete aspect ratio change in season two?
I did not notice.
So they went to 2351 at the start of season two, episode one, which is a much more, you know, that's what we all perceive as the new widescreen format. It's much wider. And I think that especially if you look at the way that all the sets are built, the bridge sets, the corridors and everything, widescreen formats are much more loving format for that kind of experience. And I think too, sci-fi just on a wider screen feels much more, I don't want to say intimate because it's bigger, but you know, you feel more involved in the story when you see more of the picture.
Definitely. So was Star Trek influential in your career choice at all? Or did it give you an interest in the industry?
A little of both. I'd always been fascinated by technology. And so when I found Star Trek, kind of, you know, I always related to Scotty because he was the problem solver and the engineer. And I always liked that he was irreverent about, you know, like, I'll fix this and, you know, I'll do it in my own time, but I'll get it done before so I can keep my reputation as a miracle worker. And I always liked that. And, you know, always fixing a problem. In fact, I always tell my boss now, my goal in life is to fix a problem and have a solution before you even knew you had the problem.
Do you think he was inflating those time estimates or really was that good?
Oh, he said it. He said it in Relics. Like he said it in the episode in Next Generation when he goes, you got a lot to learn, laddie. If you want them to think of you as a miracle worker.
Your Scotty impression is spot on. It's so good.
It is on point.
His Scottish accent's much better in that the episode of Relics, but yeah, I always liked that he was always, you know, he always had the, I'm always busy, so leave me alone, but I'll get it figured out kind of attitude.
What do you see as the strongest points in the current Star Trek productions?
It's definitely, if you watch even Voyager and Deep Space Nine were probably the last thing shot for television. So if you look at the way those are shot, they're much more shot episodic television style. Whereas Discovery and Picard are shot much more cinematic. So, and that's you look at the production teams and they're much more of the current day people who are making the television you love than the old school directors who were much more of the sitcom style shooting. So, you know, everyone says you go to any industry event now and they all say, oh, a season of television now is just an 8-hour long movie. So I think they're making that approach much more strong in the three seasons of Discovery. So you see like a much more cinematic experience. And I think that makes it better. It makes you more involved.
Definitely from week to week, you are emotionally invested more. I feel like I think about it more between the episodes than I ever did
with Voyager.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, they don't like to call them bottle episodes, but Next Gen and Discovery and Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine did a little more threading than Next Gen did, but there's not a big story arc across the whole season like there is now in modern television. So I think it's much better to, you know, something from season two will be probably revisited in season three and maybe a throwback to season one. Whereas in Next Generation, season seven, there's very little that was called back from season one.
Right. So we talked about the ratio changing. Did you notice any other technical changes between the start of Discovery and the season finale in season two?
I didn't. You know, it's interesting because one of the things is I started in TV as an editor. So that's one of the things I've always paid attention to. The editing style is different episode to episode, but that's the nature of, you know, not one person's editing every episode. So I think there's still kind of a language, and with like Alex Kurtzman being the EP, he has a very strong opinion of how the show should look. So I'm sure that he has a hand in making sure that there's consistency. There wasn't really, I mean, it's always been a really high quality production. So there's not like, oh, it was grainy and now it's clear. So I think it's been pretty consistent. The aspect ratio change was the big notice. And I think that was probably done knowing that down the road, there was a chance that the show is going to be probably put on Blu-ray so you can buy it. So, you know, CBS can make money. And then ultimately, who knows, maybe they're going to release it on other platforms for a higher quality. Do like the first season, like when you watched on CBS, the CBS All Access app, it was still just stereo for the first year, even though the show was made in 5.1.
Oh,
yeah, I remember that, like, it couldn't, like, I have a 4K TV and it wasn't quite what, like, the TV could do.
And still now it's only 1080 being distributed, but I'm sure that they're working towards, I think now that Paramount and Viacom and CBS are all one again, I think that there's some rumors out that they're getting ready to re-engineer their app completely. So hopefully that means higher quality.
I know, because they're going to rename it Paramount Plus. Yeah. So I assume there's going to be a bunch of changes when that happens.
So story-wise, what are you most excited? What are you most hopeful to see in the next season starting next week?
You know, it's interesting to see what the story arcs are going to be, because, you know, you get to the end of a season, got to the end of season one, and everybody was so excited, like, oh, there's new Trek. And then season two, I was like, okay, where are we going to go now? And we got to the end of season two, and I was like, well, I did not see that happening. So I think that, you know, the trailers that we all can watch and see what they're trying to tease us with for season three show some interesting things like the burn coming up. And, you know, I'm just speculating that they're probably talking about 2020.
I mean, at this point, seems about right.
So I don't know. I don't know where they'll take it, but I hope that there's some sort of hope for some more time travel, because I'd love to see some more Captain Pike, and I can't be the only one that like squealed like a little kid when I saw that first shot of the Enterprise crossing frame in the screen, and would love to see more of that.
Yeah,
definitely not. I was watching with a friend who, like, I've gotten into Star Trek, and I think I figured it out when they started showing the like 1701 and started freaking out. She's like, what? She's like, oh. She's like, how did you figure that out?
And the first time they took that wide shot and the ship broke frame, it was just like, well, that's what that's always supposed to have looked like. Does it still bother anyone? Like, I was always obsessed as a kid with Next Generation to think like, oh, that's a model and they're shooting it. And now you're like, that's all pixels. That's all pixels. And it looks really cool.
I had thought about that because I was talking with a friend where I watched the behind the scenes of Generations, and when they like crashed the saucer section, they made a giant model of the saucer section
and pulled it with a truck through a field.
Yeah. And I was like, that's so weird thinking about it. Like, now they're like, no, we're just going to make it with a computer.
Right.
Yeah.
And it looks amazing. I think too, one of the things, you know, hate it or love it, people, there's an indifference. I think some people love what JJ Abrams did and some people don't, but you have to give him credit that little things that he added, like dirt on the lens, when you're seeing an exterior on the lens, you know, the computer lens, when you're seeing dirt on the computer lens for the exterior, so that it feels much more like a real environment than the sterile environment that we remember from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was maybe a little bit of the, he did Star Wars later, but that George Lucas idea that you make space look lived in.
Right.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane said a great thing in the DVDs for the re-release of Next Generation. And he said, Star Trek Next Generation, and I think series thereafter, felt believable because it felt like, you know, it was like a flying office. So you had the same dynamics of the office interaction, but it was in space. So it made it feel real. And you kind of believed in the characters because there was this real environment around them where it wasn't just like, oh, we're going to hop in a spaceship now.
Well, I was wondering, because you mentioned that you always pay attention to editing. Were there like any particular like episodes in the first two seasons of Discovery that like any like fun editing things you noticed or like that changed it up? Or
the last two episodes, Such Sweet Sorrow, I really liked the pacing. I get kind of annoyed with people who overuse the Steadicam just to be like, oh, look, we're using a Steadicam. I really like the way that the angles, Dutch angles. So that's when you take the camera and you turn it sideways and then tilt over. And I think that's some of the language coming through J.J. Abrams. There's a lot of really nice shots, especially if you watch like the last 10 minutes of Such Sweet Sorrow part two, when you see them like wrapping up business and like Pike going back to the Enterprise and Captain Georgiou finishing up Leland. There's a lot of really great edits back and forth of like one scene will end on a certain screen direction and then it's a seamless transition into the screen direction for the next scene. So it's a really nice fluidity that they clearly planned out in the edit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a really good point. Because I rewatched the second season recently and I forgot how much happens in that last two-parter, and I was like, and they keep it moving. Yeah. So you're not sitting there like, oh my god, so
it's
much happening.
So fast.
Yeah.
And I mean, we didn't talk about it, but like you get Jeff Russo to score the whole series. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. Because I read somewhere that one of the things that was holding up season three was that they were still wanting to do the score and they had to change how they were doing it because they couldn't get everyone in the same room. But I like really appreciated they're like, no, we're still going to do the score like with real instruments, a whole orchestra, and we're going to figure out how to do it this
right.
way.
And it sounds amazing. I think Jeff Russo has done a really great job too, sprinkling in some of the like Alexander Goldsmith and Jerry Goldsmith and Alexander Courage original themes. So there's like those little sprinklings that you're like, oh, that's Trek.
Even that little twangy sound they play on the bridge that calls back to the original Star Trek. I love that.
Yeah.
And even the red alert kind of sounds like a kind of like precursor to the Enterprise red alert from the original series.
Did he also do Picard? Did you know if he scored
Picard?
Let me go
look. I think he did a couple episodes. I don't.
Yeah. I always appreciate that they, you know, they had its own score, but every time, like when Seven would show up, they would start playing the Voyager score a little bit. And there was like a big heroic moment and then they go full on and just play the Voyager score. And I was like, yes, give me more.
Yeah. They sound really good.
Looking right now.
And I know that like the lens flares have been really controversial in the fandom, but I was saying on Twitter that I really don't mind them and I enjoy a good, well-placed lens flare. Yes. And I was glad that that was one of the things that they kind of saved from the J.J. Abrams era and they blended them together.
Yeah. I think they're great. I do think that if you watch, you know, I call it Star Trek 2009. If you watch the first JJ Star Trek, there's a lot of lens flares. They tone it down for the next two. So I think it's a little better balance, but the idea is cool. And, you know, JJ's been one of the holdouts that still shot 2009 on 35 millimeter because he wanted to make sure that it still had that kind of, you know, the taste of Star Trek. And then there's, you can see all the great behind the scenes shots of JJ when he comes up behind the camera operator and he has his little tapping that he does on the on the film reel that causes the film to slide back and forth in the gate, and you get that nice little shaking effect, which is just awesome. Mm-hmm. It was Jeff Russo for all 10 episodes of Picard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Even just so talented.
Yeah. And again, like Michael,
boring, like an entire show like that.
Like, Michael's, all his, he started in video games too, and just knew what needed to be done to fulfill the need for Star Trek.
Lewis, did you have any questions? I don't want to put you on the spot.
I would like to ask. I would like to ask you your opinion about Point of Light from the montage perspective, because I felt like it was a little heavy.
In the sense that, like, storyline?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it is, but I mean, if you look at, I'm sure you all have seen on Twitter, there's a bunch of people going back and forth with, you know, Star Trek's never been political. It's like, hang on. Like, the first interracial kiss on television happened on Star Trek. Like, Star Trek's always been, the whole idea Gene Roddenberry had was, let's tackle the issues of day-to-day life, but set it in space so that people don't get pissed.
Right. It made it a little bit more, it made it foreign, so people were able to accept the message a little bit without being insulted by it, I think.
Right.
Be aware that there are a lot of trolls out there that they say they are Trek fans, but I have my doubts.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we all had, like, you know, I was telling Marcy before you guys came on, like, I got beat up a lot in school. And then when they found out I was a Star Trek fan, they were like, oh, what's up, Trekkie? How's it going, Trekkie? And I was like, it's Trekker. Thank you very much.
I've often wondered, that was one of the first things I asked when I joined the fandom in January, was what's the difference between Trekkie and Trekker? And I was told it went back like a ways.
I've never understood the difference, but I've always thought, like,
same.
Like, if I am a person who treks, I would be a Trekker. I wouldn't be a Trekkie. So
that's true. I've gotten so many people going, like, if I use either term, people telling me, like, no, you should use the other one, that I have to start saying I'm a Star Trek fan. Because I'm like, I don't
want to offend the, like, again, you don't want to offend the opposite party. Yeah.
I've tried to go with Treksters, which I'm like, can we start like a new thing, like hipsters?
I like Treksters.
Yeah, because it doesn't have a history to it yet. So maybe.
Yeah.
Treksters.
That's pretty good. Aren't we here to enjoy this? Like, this is a thing. It's not like someone's gonna be like, oh, you missed Canon 5 Alpha 3 page 65. You're gonna die now.
I pointed out to someone, they're like, you actually like the new trilogy? I was like, yeah. And I was like, what? Did you want the last Star Trek movie to be Nemesis?
Yeah, exactly.
I hadn't watched it in a long time before Picard came out, so I decided to rewatch it. I rewatched it and I was like, oh, I was right. This isn't good.
So I hadn't seen it until after Picard came out. So I didn't understand what happened to Data the whole time I'm watching Picard.
You're like, what's wrong with Data? Data,
right? Like, I kept being like, what happened to Data? Why isn't he here? And then I saw Nemesis. And it was so horrible.
That's traumatic. That's horribly traumatic.
That was the absolute wrong order to watch those things in.
Yeah. I was giving someone the other day, they're like, what do I need to watch for Picard? And I said, you actually have to watch Nemesis. And then I just put, I'm sorry.
Sorry. I'm sorry, like, for what's about to happen to you.
I saw that in a movie theater on a date. And like, and we left the theater. She goes, was that good? And I was like, no, it wasn't.
All right, last question. Who is your favorite character? And we don't like doing this, but we always do it to ourselves. Who's your favorite character? And who are you most excited to see their story arc?
So previously to my birthday this year, which was in May, which feels like 4,000 years ago.
But it's only March. How did you have your birthday?
Yeah. I keep referring to it as BC before Corona. the Captain Pike, like hands down. Like I am so impressed with Anson Mount, and I can't wait to see whatever films and everything they build around him and spinoffs. My buddy, knowing that I'm a huge Star Trek fan, got Doug Jones to send me a cameo for my birthday.
Oh,
and
that's great.
It was like 12 minutes long. And he is one of the nicest, sweetest people ever to send me any video of any sort. And he was kind and he was caring. He made fun of me for being over 40 and was just very nice. So I was like, oh,
that's awesome.
I guess I'm kind of a fan of Saru now. I mean, I always was, but like, there's something about the Starfleetness of Pike that makes me love Pike. So big fan there. But yeah, Saru, I was like, oh, okay, Doug Jones, I kind of like you now.
I love him. I love watching him grow in his emotional journey with his anxiety. I can relate to that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for joining us on Disco Tech Podcast.
Totally. Thanks for having me. I could talk Trek with you all for hours.
Yeah, we'd love to have you on again sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you for joining us for Disco Tech Podcast.